Art and War. Art and War. As an ordinary viewer, I watch movies, look at paintings, and even photographs about the wars. They show hard times of conflicts and the aftermath. Some use art as a propaganda or as a documentary tool to influence the viewers. How could this art represent the cruelty and legacy of war to common viewers like you and me? Therefore, I choose to interview some artists, painters, photographers, and filmmakers. I'd like to discuss how they depict the war in their artworks. In simple language, away from sophisticated terms, in this vodcast, stay tuned with us with our new series of Art and War. Our guest is Mr. Robert McNeil. He is a friend and a tutor before being an artist and forensic technician. He is a Glasgow-based painter who, following his retiring from a long career as an anatomical pathology technologist, now focuses on his roles as an ambassador for Remembering Srebrenica, UK, and as an artist for UNESCO's refugee integration through language and the arts. His artworks include a wide range of subjects, including portraits, self-portrait, still life, cityscapes, and war. Robert was invited to form part of national and international forensic teams that were tasked with providing physical and scientific evidence of terrorist attacks in the UK and Ireland, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide in war zones in the Balkans and in Africa. He also assisted in the identification of British and Australian soldiers killed in France during World War I and victims of the 2004 Southeast Asia tsunami in Thailand. Prior to 1996, he worked for 30 years as an anatomical pathology technologist and Glasgow National Health Systems Mortuary Operations Manager. He is a past chair of the Association of Anatomical Pathology Technologists. He was awarded an MPE, Member of British Empire, for services to pathology in 1999. He retired in 2009. Welcome, sir. It's a great honor to interview you in our podcast.
Thank you, Iman, for that introduction.
First, what is an art? Could you please give us a simple definition of art?
I suppose art is the expression of ideas and emotions through a physical medium like painting, sculpture, film, dance, writing, or photography, or theatre. And so it's also very useful for teaching and for recording history. So, but it can be used for pleasure, simply for people to enjoy art in any form that they feel appropriate. But it can also sometimes, sadly, be used as propaganda. But in the main, it's really about creating ideas, as I say, through these different ways, and I chose painting as my way to try and record something of my life in my former career.
So art is an interpretation of what we see and what we feel. Generally, we define art as a mirror of our society, experience, and thoughts. Your journey is a long one, from forensic work to painting. You also volunteered in many activities. Could you tell us about this long journey, please?
Yes, well, when I retired from my forensic career in 2009, I looked for a hobby to pass the time, and I've always loved looking at paintings in museums and galleries, and so my wife, Kathy, bought me an easel as a retirement present. So I decided to teach myself how to paint, and I had never. When I started painting, I assumed that no one would be interested in them. I painted really just for pleasure for myself. However, I started to paint images from my former career, and my wife showed one or two of those paintings to a local art gallery, and they surprised me by saying that these paintings should be seen by the public, and that started me on this long journey of expression through my paintings that seems to help understand what happened in particular during the Bosnian War.
So, from homicide and suicide towards genocide. This is a different aspect of forensic investigation. It is a complex trauma to victims, relatives, and also to the workers in the field. How do you depict the traumatic genocide in your art? Do you use symbols or direct representation?
Oh yes, this is very different. I spent 40 years working with pathologists in mortuaries, mainly in Scotland, establishing how and why people had died or been killed, and so it was very interesting work, I have to say, but it wasn't really, it didn't resemble anything that I witnessed when I first went out to Bosnia. So, but I found that during your carrying out autopsies is not a particularly pleasant experience. But I was aware that the families who had lost their loved ones were often very keen to know exactly how the loved ones had died, and so it helped to discover through our work how the loved ones had died. But I did work with but mainly with people who had died natural causes where their death was unexplained, but I also worked with many cases of homicide and suicide, and those were very tragic deaths, but they did help me later when I started volunteering to go out to various war zones.
Me, as a common viewer, I can detect some symbols and bits and animals in this painting, for example. Could you please explain to us?
Well, yes, you're right, Dr. Mann. This painting is really very symbolic, and the and indeed a candle where the flame has been snuffed out is because that the candle being snuffed out means sudden death to me. In other words, the light has gone out of people's lives. And on this case, the candle is sitting on top of a Muslim prayer mat, and this is symbolic of the fact that so many Muslims were murdered in Bosnia. And printed on the candle are the words July 95, which is the date when over 8,500 men and boys disappeared from Srebrenica, and found in mass graves.
You choose a green color for this rug. Does it represent something?
Yeah. Yes, that's the I've included a Srebrenica flag on the prayer mat, and it's not too clear, but there are 11 petals to this flower that symbolize the date of the when the men and boys disappeared from Srebrenica, and the green in the center represents peace and justice, or peace through justice, and that's what that means. And there is a Celtic knot sewn onto the prayer mat, and this is simply something that's very common in Scotland, because I'm from Scotland and I wanted to show some solidarity behind the Muslims, not just in Scotland, but certainly in Bosnia as well.
The trauma of war is not only collective trauma to relatives and families. It also a trauma or individual trauma to workers in the field of investigation, documentation and photography. Is the impact of trauma different between families and victim and your teams?
Yes, I think it is different because the job of the journalists and photographers and investigators is to record events as and when they happen. And they experience trauma mainly because of what they see happening or has happened to others, but not necessarily to themselves. And the trauma and loss experienced by those more directly involved, such as relatives, is a result of what actually happened to them and their loved ones. And people whose job it is to report on wars, they do so, and some of them are very brave people who have experienced or witnessed sights that are extremely traumatic to them. But at the end of their deployment, they return home to their families and their loved ones and take up their own reality, which is not the reality of the victims who have suffered and may continue to suffer for many, many years, the loss of their loved ones. And this can go on not just for them, but for the generation to follow, who have to, have to live with what their parents or their grandparents experienced. And so I think there is certainly trauma involved to those reporting on such terrible events and atrocities, but my sympathies lie mainly with the bereaved and those who lost their lives.
The victims try to do some activities to get rid of their sadness due to loss and bereavement. The government and some non-governmental organizations try to help them. Could drawing and painting enable them to deal with this trauma?
Yes, I feel that that for those who feel able to express their feelings and experience through creative work, it can help them deal with the trauma, and it can be therapeutic for them, but only if they feel able to, because it doesn't work for anyone. And so if I could just mention that I myself experience symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder virtually on the day that when I retired. It had never bothered me before, and I found that it helped me a lot by creating art from some of the images that came to me during the night in my sleep. I experienced some quite graphic nightmares of some of the sights that I've seen. But I was always able to say to myself that what I experienced was nothing compared to what those victims and their families experienced. But I did feel that that it helped me. And for children, children who have experienced war or trauma often create important and very honest records of their experiences through drawings or writing. And I've seen images that children make, of drawings, etc., of bombs going off, and they're very graphic, but they're very important, because they record the feelings and experiences of the children from that time. And I mentioned writing as well, and when you consider that, in almost every war that I can remember or have read about, children keep diaries, etc. And I suppose one of the most famous ones is the Diary of Anne Frank, where that became her diary became a work of art in itself, because it documented what happened to her and to many other children during the Second World War. And so, yeah, I think that it's important to stress, though, that that children or even adults shouldn't be pushed into creating art, because some people prefer to keep what happened to them hidden and they don't talk about it. So it's for those who wish to express themselves or to talk about it, that I like to encourage them to try and create art in any form that they feel appropriate.
So this is a call to encourage those responsible for children in conflict zones. Children have to express their feelings by speaking out, storytelling, drawing, or painting. Some of these children may feel shy or introverted, so drawing will be a good tool or choice for them. I notice your paintings are not concerned with only one snap view, but they include many stages of the events. Also, you added some symbols in your painting. You are telling a long story in each painting, which is unique. I like it. If we took this morgue as an example, it included many series in the forensic activities which are not happening simultaneously in the same time. I think you call it a trilogy panel. Could you explain that unique painting, please?
Yeah, triptych. Yeah. Okay. Well, the first mortuary, temporary mortuary that we were placed in 1996. This was a few months, only a few months after the victims' bodies were discovered in the mass graves. And the mortuary was in a little village called Kalisha, that was fairly close to the actual grave itself. And so I wanted to try in this painting to show what the conditions were like for the forensic team. And so I created this triptych, it's called. That's like three paintings with one common purpose, and that is to try and tell a story. And there are three parts to this story. It's actually three canvases, three separate canvases that, when put together, tell the story. And the first one on the left of your picture is one of the forensic team who has left her work for a moment to try and take a moment or two for because the a moment or two to for reflection, I suppose. And she's not hiding, but she's out of the way, out of common gaze, because she the work can be quite upsetting at times, and people need to get a breather from time to time from not just the work, but the smell and the conditions that people worked in. The second panel was something that I experienced in this mortuary, where women, mainly women, and some children would arrive at the gates of the mortuary, desperate for news of what happened to their loved one, because many of the women, as you know, were told by Ratko Mladic that that the men were only taken for questioning and it would be returned to them. But as time went by and the men hadn't appeared, the women knew about or found out about this temporary mortuary and would arrive each day and beg us for information about their loved ones. They wanted their bodies returned to them, so that they could give them a decent burial. And because this is a process that took a very long time, especially at the beginning, we couldn't sadly give them back their bodies when they wanted them to, because as you know, in the Muslim faith, the or Muslims, Islam wants the victims or bodies buried as quickly as possible, and this was an extra trauma for the families to be denied that. But it was also quite upsetting for the team as well, because they could hear the women crying in the background, and that was quite an emotional experience. And then the third panel, in it you can see it would be an anthropologist examining the bones of a victim to try and establish why that person had died. And you can just about perhaps make out a hole in the skull. This would be a bullet hole, and she was establishing the cause of death to provide the evidence for the courts, in the ICTY courts in The Hague, and that was quite a distressing work as well. As you can see, the water in the basin is filthy, and the hope of identifying the bodies was at the in the early days quite difficult, because DNA wasn't up and running, although it was a major factor later. And in the background of this painting, you could see torn rags of clothing hanging on a line, and this was the clothes that were re these were the clothes that were removed from the victims' bodies, because they could help a lot with the identification. Although it's important to say that if a victim was found wearing clothing, it couldn't be guaranteed that that clothing belonged to the same person that wore them, because as you may know, that the people in Srebrenica and in other areas were had been held under siege for 3 years, and clothing would be exchanged all the time. And in the panel, in the in that third panel, you see a refrigerated UN container with body bags piled up inside. Each container could hold up to 200 bodies, which was very upsetting. And finally, the number in at the top of the container, 8372, is the number of victims that were that disappeared from Srebrenica in July 1995. And I mentioned clothing, Imani. You'll see on those other two smaller panels, you'll see on the left, clothing being laid out for women to come.
The third one, please, about details of the forensic work.
Okay. Yes, women would come to the mortuary to look at clothing. As time went by, it was impossible for them to be able to identify bodies. And so clothing was a very useful tool. And the painting on the right, you can see a jumper hanging up on a hanging, and that represents. Yes, that's right. Yes, and this jumper belonged. Women, as I say, would come and look at paintings. Sorry, look at clothing. And in this particular day, a woman arrived and she saw this jumper hanging on a line, drying, and she collapsed. She recognized it as belonging to her husband, who is a professor in the university in Kosovo, in Pristina. And she begged us to have that jumper. She was so upset because the jumper had been presented to him by the World Wildlife Fund for the work they had done in saving animals' lives. And she asked us to, if we could have the jumper. And normally we would say no because it's part of the evidence. But on this occasion, she was so upset that we gave her the jumper. But I remember speaking to the pathologist afterwards, and we discussed whether or not she would see the bullet entry in the shoulder of the jumper, the entry point for the bullet, and the exit point in the lower part of his back. And that indicated to us that the poor man was on his knees when he was shot.
It is a unique, meticulous work of teams of forensic and photography. Each step and artifact is accurately photographed and labeled. I should thank you and all teams for this work.
What I would say about this painting is that sometimes women were invited to the mortuary to look at clothing, because by 1998, the women, some of the women were desperate to find out if their men were dead, and so we would invite them into the mortuary where we would lay clothing out that we'd removed from the victims' bodies. And these were very emotional times, because the women came to the mortuaries hoping that they wouldn't be able to identify clothing in the hope that their men would still be alive. But sadly, when they were invited, all of them would enter the room. The clothing could be laid on tables or on the floor. And when they recognized an article of clothing, they obviously became extremely emotional. And I remember the first time that that happened in Bosnia, in the mortuary in Visoko, when a woman identified some articles of clothing, she immediately said the name of her son. And that came as a shock to me, in a way. I don't know why it came as a shock, but to hear the victim's name instead of the way we described the victims were with by grave numbers. And so it was the first time that I had heard the name of a victim, and that meant so much to me, because it put a character on the victim. But of course, the woman, the mother, was she couldn't be consoled, and she was escorted out of the mortuary. But at least she felt she knew that her son was probably dead. But of course, that then would mean more pressure on the team to try and identify the victim's body, so that the family could take them away and bury them in a respectful way. So there were very emotional days for the team, as well as obviously for the families. And these days occurred both in Bosnia and in Kosovo, where I talked about another one of the paintings earlier.
I think she collapsed as she faced the truth. Before, she hoped her husband may be alive. However, she realized face to face he is dead by seeing his jumper.
Okay, right. This painting, I would never show it to children in schools. I think it's too graphic, and I use my paintings to illustrate some events, and use them in schools and universities and even prisons. And some paintings I find are not acceptable for certain people. For example, sexual violence. Although I have made one painting indicating sexual violence, it's a very sensitive subject, and teachers don't like me to talk about that in front of children, obviously, and nor do the authorities want me to talk to prisoners about them. But I wanted to do this painting because it highlighted, I think, just the procedure that was carried out in the mortuaries. By this time, the bodies were almost bones, all bones, but there was still soft tissue on them, and it was quite a gruesome job to try and carry out the autopsies on them. And so it just talks a bit about the process where each body at every stage is photographed, and evidence that I would collect from the victim's body would, or especially artifacts, because it was often the case that the bodies are included in the bodies in the clothing might be personal belongings. And so I would pass them on to the police officer, who's the chap sitting in the forefront of this painting. And the very first item that I discovered on my first autopsy, at my first autopsy, was in the shoe of one of the victims. He still was wearing his shoes. And in the insole of the shoe was a crumpled up piece of paper that turned out to be a photograph of the presumably the victim's mother, perhaps his grandmother, and two of his children. And evidence like that was very important to help with the identification of the victims. Because they could show backgrounds where they may have lived, but also what we discovered in clothing was that in the lining of clothing, sometimes we found rolled up pieces of paper that contained prayers written by the local imam, and the women would sew these prayers into the men's jackets because almost everything was taken from them when they were captured by the Serbs. And those prayers turned out to be vital, because often the name of the imam would be on it, as well as the name of the victim, and where they came from, the village that he came from. So all of these were important, important pieces of evidence that would go to The Hague, to be used for the prosecution of the perpetrators.
It is a unique, meticulous work of teams of forensic and photography. Each step and artifact is accurately photographed and labeled. I should thank you and all teams for this work.
Yes. No, that's okay, Iman. But I think it's important also to mention, you say that the work was very meticulous, and that is true, because pathologists in particular have to be extremely meticulous when they carry out autopsies like this, because they know that the cases will end up in court, and they will be tested by the defense lawyers. So each post-mortem, it could take half a day, sometimes longer, to carry out each autopsy. And it became under great pressure, because that meant that the bodies were piling into the mortuary. There was great pressure for us to do the work more quickly. But especially in the early days, when the teams were quite small. However, we learned such a lot from that first experience. And developed protocols that made the work a bit more smooth, but we also increased the times. Sometimes by four times the number, and able to try and carry out the work just as meticulously, but be able to get through the work a bit more quickly.
Even this is against denial of the genocide. I think genocide deniers and revisionists are not mentioning details of forensic investigations because they are losers when they come to this issue. And any denier should have a look at the painting. It is not a hobby or propaganda. This is a documentation which will last for life.
Yes. Yes. That's a very important point you make, Dr. Aman, because one of the reasons that I show these paintings and talk about them is because of genocide denial. And people don't understand how much forensic work was carried out there. There were experts from 32 countries around the world, including one or two from Serbia, who carried out this work. So I would say to deniers that if they look at the evidence, and these paintings, from my point of view, demonstrate that what happened did in fact happen, and that there is plenty of evidence to prove it. And these paintings help illustrate what happened. I think that genocide denial is a very tragic situation for the families, because it's as if they're going through their trauma all over again. And it's so hurtful to them to hear people saying that it didn't happen. I think that part of the job is important, and why I continue to try and help people remember what happened, and to help give some closure to families who are still suffering, because don't forget there are still many missing bodies, where families still haven't been able to bury their loved ones.
Many scientific abstracts deal with this meticulous heavy duty, as it is not preceded in these numbers with thousands with high accuracy. I think we need more announcements about this work as evidence of the Bosnian genocide. Congratulations to you and all forensic teams for your excellent work. Drawing for adults and children, even if they are not professional, is beneficial. It could be a therapy for any stress, whether it is a minor or a major. Regarding relief of minor stress or post-traumatic stress disorder. During World War I and II, many photographers, painters were in formal missions to document the events of wars, as in trenches or gas attacks in famous paintings. It was an autobiography for them. The paintings are alarming or warning sign to persons and leaders calling for further wars. They are not smart. Any step or negotiation should be heard well and followed before rushing to war. Therefore, you have an objective while painting. Can I classify your paintings as anti-war art?
I think reporting in wars, whether through painting, photography, or writing, create a historical record of what actually happened in wars in the past. Before photography was invented, of course, paintings were the only way to record events. And although in some cases those paintings sadly often glorified wars, thankfully we've moved away from that. And you asked the question: is it a warning? Are these paintings a warning against further war as well. Anything that can be done to warn against war and help educate and remember must be a positive thing, I believe. And certainly, there are many, many examples of war art going back in history. Some very famous painters would create paintings who have perhaps and photographers who witnessed events like that. And those images are vital in terms of writing history, reporting on these events. And so in a small way, I try to do that myself by talking to school children, to and students, and as I mentioned, prisoners as well, because it's we have to continue. I believe people who report on wars shouldn't give up. They should continue for as often as possible that they can and are able to. Because what they do, I think, is an important record. And it's important that these paintings generate discussion, I think, and I find that quite rewarding. I'll give you an example, a man where I went into a school and the teacher had given a different picture of the war in Bosnia. Some of the paintings, a picture of the paintings that I had done, and she split the group, the pupils into four, and gave each of them a painting, and the groups would talk about them. I would go around the class and answer questions about them, and then at the end of the teaching session, the children were asked to stand up and describe their paintings. And the teacher was so clever because the way that she had organized it, the pupils actually reported on the Bosnian War almost from start to finish. And so they had a very well-rounded understanding of what happened by simply piecing the photographs together. And that's what forensic people do to a certain extent as well, because when they recover bodies and they take into account all the scraps of belongings, evidence, etc., they create a picture or a timeline of the victim's life, and that is very helpful. It's helpful in a forensic way, but also it helps from a historical point of view to be able to accurately piece together the remnants of the victim's life. And I think that helps the families as well, because when they know that that's what's being done, they're very grateful. I must say that forensic people, when they do their work, many of them never talk about it, because part of the reason for that is that that we are trained into not speaking about our art, sorry, about our forensic work, because it could compromise a trial. So they tend not to speak about it. I chose, after many years, to talk about it. But what we discovered in Bosnia, certainly, was that we carried out the work. The only time we came across relatives was when they came, as I explained, to the mortuaries to identify clothing. However, when I started supporting Remembering Srebrenica, I was invited to return to Bosnia. In one case, I took a group of forensic experts that I had worked with out there, and we were able to speak to the families of the victims in many cases, and we all found this a very humbling experience. But what surprised us most of all, I think, was how grateful the families were to know that when the bodies were taken from these terrible places, and cleaned up and returned to them for respectful burial, They were extremely grateful to us for that. And that, from a personal point of view, and I'm sure for the others that were with me, meant such a lot, because we realized that that we were helping people as well as providing evidence for the courts.
Can we go to the men of Srebrenica, please? You made many paintings about stories of victims of Srebrenica. One of them is this marvelous painting.
Yes. Okay, well, this painting is called Men of Srebrenica. And although I wasn't present at this event, obviously, I decided to do this painting based on the evidence that we gathered, especially on the early days from 1996, where most of the bodies, men's bodies and boys, they were wearing blindfolds and had their hands tied very tightly behind their backs. And this came as a bit of a shock. But in addition to that, Dr. Oman, many of the victims' bodies were very thin. They had been under siege for 3 years and they were starving. And many of the men also showed evidence of being badly beaten before they were taken and executed. And so they would be taken by buses or trucks to a field, and there they were executed. They were lined up and executed. And part of the reason that I did this painting was what I felt when dealing with the bodies, that I try and understand a couple of things. One was how the men could possibly cope with hearing the gunfire and marching towards their deaths. But I also wondered about the soldiers, how on earth they were able to carry out these killings. I mean, I set this painting at night time. You can see the moon in the background, and that's because the killings went on throughout the day and night from July 11th continuously for 4 or 5 days, where 8,500 men were murdered. And so I wondered about the soldiers, and who I assume would have families, mums, dads, etc. And I wondered what on earth the parents of these soldiers would think if they knew what their sons or their fathers had done to these people, simply because they believed in a faith that wasn't the same as theirs. They were Muslims, and so that's really all I can say about the painting. I felt that I was qualified in a way to illustrate this work, because of the manner in which the victims were treated before they were killed. So that's why I did that painting. And I donated, sorry, I was going to say I donated this painting among one or two others to the United Kingdom, Bosnia and Herzegovina network. Yes, the one on the right was, that photo was taken at a Remembering Srebrenica memorial event last year in the Houses of Parliament, and I felt quite honoured to have that painting in front of, seen by all of the politicians that came to the memorial event, and I was able to chat to those politicians about the war and why I did these paintings. And so and it's just another way of trying to help people understand what happened and to remember. The painting shows different ages, men of different ages. There were men and boys, and in the painting I tried to show elderly men as well. You can see one or two elderly people in the painting. who were way beyond fighting age. They wouldn't cause any problem at all. And some of them, one or two of them, had artificial limbs, for example. And so it was the cruelty that was carried out against them was terrible. Okay, Iman. Well, I'd like to thank you publicly as well for the humanitarian work that you do. It's people like you that must carry the torch for the future generations to talk about what happened in history, and it's so important to remember.
Thank you. Thank you. You are welcome, sir.
Okay then. Thank you very much. Bye bye. Bye.